Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Laps Factor Podcast. What is up, college lacrosse fans? You're watching episode number 278 of the Lax Factor Podcast. I am your host, Ted Hoost, and we are going to dive directly into this and talk immediately about number 2, Johns Hopkins, and number 9, Syracuse. Jake Stevens' man-up goal dished by Owen Hiltz was the eventual game winner for Syracuse, despite coming with 9:46 left in the game. That gave Cuse a 14-11 lead, and despite Hopkins going on to score 3 of the game's next 4 goals to put a solid scare into the Orange faithful, including myself, Syracuse came away with the 14-13 win, picking up Gates' first win over a top 5 team. I believe that is actually accurate and true. Syracuse, they were 0-2 in the first half in man-up opportunities. They go 2 of 3 over the second half. That ends up proving key, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Hopkins was 0-for-3 in the first half with the extra man, but they scored their only extra man goal in the fourth quarter. Matt Collison's goal with 2:31 left that got the Jays back to within a goal. Now, those were key because both teams were completely high and dry on man-ups in the first half, and both teams were successful in the second, and that ended up factoring late. Now, before we get all light and airy, and we talk about how good the Syracuse offense was in this game, we have to come out and say Mason Cone gets the game ball. Absolutely no question. The kid goes 8 of 25 with 11 ground balls from the dot. Syracuse won 7 of 9 draws over that low-scoring first half. That ended up helping Syracuse keep pace and hold, you know, keep everything close in terms of the outcome of this game. They won 15 of 22 to close out the game, 22 of 31 overall over the course of the entire game. Mullen, even while spelling Cone, he was 6 of 4. So enough cannot be said about the game that Mason Cone had. Enough cannot be said about how well Mullen played in spelling him and how well Mullen's played so far. The turnaround at the faceoff dot is the biggest reason Syracuse was able to win this game. So I just want to get that out there. I'd like to talk about offense. I was an attackman, but the not just Mason Cone, but the overall wing play for Syracuse has been incredible, and that really propelled them, I think, to this victory. Now, the Syracuse ride, that had Hopkins flustered. The Jays failed on 6 clears on the day, going just 11 of 17 overall. And Hopkins is a very good clearing team, one of the best teams in the country in getting the ball from their defensive side to their offensive side. And Syracuse flummoxed them, especially early in this game. So that was huge. Now, a huge turning point in this game, Hopkins had just tied things up at 8-all off of Jimmy Ayers' goal dished by Dylan Bauer with 3:31 left in the third quarter. That capped a 3-goal Blue Jays run, and at this point, they have a ton of momentum. It's 8-all, and I'm starting to sweat. Now, enter Joey Spallina with a flag down, in essence, a free possession, and the ball deep at X on a restart. He finds Luke Roja cutting down the backside crease, a perfect pass, and Syracuse has the lead back just a minute after Hopkins tied things up. And that's kind of how the game went here. Every time Hopkins would kind of go on a run to get things back to interesting, Syracuse would always have an answer. That ended up being the start of a 4-goal run that was capped by Sam English scoring unassisted just 56 seconds into the fourth quarter. That gave Syracuse a 12-8 lead, and while Hop would continue to nip at their heels throughout the game, it just wouldn't be enough. Now, one of the things I've noticed here all season so far for Hopkins, their defense has 2 weaknesses. They are a very strong defensive team, a very efficient defensive team, but they have 2 weaknesses, and Syracuse was luckily able to exploit them both to a degree. The Hopkins defense, they always play heavy, they play aggressive, and they help all over the field. They help early, they help often, and when they help with anger and rage to a degree. That's how they've been playing all year. Problem being, all year, they've been a little bit soft on the backside off ball. Because they're always having to what you would call slough down and play help defense on the backside because they know they're going to slide and they're going to a slide aggressively. They love to double team the ball. If the offensive player turns his back to the defense, they like to just go and double team the ball. They did that a couple of times effectively against Syracuse here. But one of the things that hurts is your backside guys have to kind of come in to help the backside of the crease, and they have gotten burned quite a bit. It happened in this game. It happened against Denver, where they're just not playing tight enough off ball, leaving guys open. Not necessarily always snipers from like the backside. Sometimes it's just that cutter that streaks down that backside. Sometimes it is just a guy that gets lost in the crease because he flashes in front of his defender who was trying to help or whatnot. But that ends up hurting Hopkins at times, and Syracuse was able to take advantage of that. And then penalties. Hopkins, for some reason, likes to commit penalties in the second half of games, and that cause that, you know, and it ends up shooting them in the foot. We'll talk about that here in a little bit, because as we said, Syracuse, they didn't do well overall in terms of man up early in the game. They were 0-2 early, but they go 1-1 in the third quarter. They get two EMOs in the fourth, and one of them being the Jake Stevens goal. So they go 1-2. So Cuse 2-5 overall. Didn't really kill Hopkins, but still that aggressive play ends up causing some, you know, inopportune, let's say, penalties overall. Another issue I had with Hopkins was offensively. I felt like offensively overall, we didn't see enough of Matt Collison. I just didn't hear his name enough. I didn't see him initiating the offense as much as I would have liked to. Now, maybe that's by design. He's obviously going to draw pulls, and maybe they're avoiding pulls. But on a day where the Syracuse short sticks did a good job on their matchups and the Syracuse short stick defensive players actually looked like they had their shit together, I would have expected for them to try to feed that beast in Collison a little bit more, and they didn't do that. For Syracuse, defensively, they played well. They didn't have the greatest game, and granted, possessions were definitely tilted in their favor, but they got stops when they needed to. Will Mark didn't have his best day, so the defense forced some turnovers. They were pesky. They were on shooters' hands. They had the three-man-up stops early in the game. They had that fourth man-up where they did give up a goal that let Hopkins get back to within two. But other than that, defensively, Syracuse looked good, and I was most surprised. Riley Figueroas did a good job. Figueras did a good job against what's his nuts? We'll talk about that here in a little bit when we're looking at the stats. I'm just drawing a blank here in the moment. And then, like I said, the short stick defensive midfielders did a good job. If we look statistically at what happened here, as we go through Hopkins stats, let's see. Jacob Angelus. Oh, my gosh. I was drawing a total blank here. But Figueres, I think, did a good job on Angelus. He goes for no goals, three helpers, just one shot on the day. That was huge in the win. We see Matt Collison was 2-1 off just six shots. I thought they could have fed that beast a little bit more, especially later in that game over, let's say, the third quarter. There were periods where, let's say, Syracuse did get possession after possession, and it seemed like Hopkins, to start the game, barely had the ball, and then in the beginning of the third quarter, barely had the ball, but still, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more Matt Collison. Now, Garrett Degnan was an absolute killer. Five goals off 14 shots. Syracuse just kept leaving him open in bad spots, and he made them pay often. But as we come down here and we see Mason Cohn, 18 of 25 at the faceoff dot, 11 ground balls, just an incredible day out of him. Owen Hiltz for Syracuse, he goes 2 of 3 on the day off seven shots. We see Joey Spallina on a day where he's being guarded by Smith, one of the better defenders in the country. He goes for 2 goals, 3 helpers, 5 points off 7 shots. 4 turnovers still, but still, I mean, he's taking chances. He's trying to feed dudes, and he got the job done here today. Sam English was solid, 1-1, but it was Christian Moulet. He goes for 3 goals, and then Jake Stevens also goes for 3 goals, even though Syracuse is crazy and they don't let me sort these stats here. So all in all, an excellent day out of the Syracuse defense. Like we said, Chase Erland was very good. He helped keep Hopkins in this, 15 saves, 14 goals against, and Will Mark, just mediocre, 11 saves, 13 goals against. A couple of big saves early, though, to kind of give Syracuse some momentum and let them do their thing early. So either way, man, I was absolutely freaking delighted here and can't believe the outcome. Cuse picks up a top 5 win here. Hopkins is a legitimate contender after beating Virginia last week. Now Syracuse has a win over a team that has played the ACC well. I think Hopkins has another ACC game. I forget against who. Maybe North Carolina, maybe Duke or something like that. We'll see. Maybe it was Maryland that plays another ACC team. I can't remember. So that's it about that game. Now, guys, because I started the show with no intro or anything like that, as always, be sure to like, subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the notification bell. If you are an audio listener, share the crap out of it. Hit us up across all social media. I try to keep clips coming and everything like that, but still, follow us wherever you can, and you can always go to laxfactor.com, get swag. We have a We have a beer glass here. We also have T-shirts. All sorts of stuff that you can take advantage of and make yourself look cool. You can either get the Lax Factor Podcast T-shirt. You can get Club Lacrosse All-Star. I can't believe more people haven't bought this T-shirt. It's kind of a sick T-shirt, man. Custom design, you know, Club Lacrosse All-Star. We actually did something similar to this for a client back when we were printing jerseys. I can't believe more people haven't bought that. Buy that freaking shirt. That shirt is dope. Support the channel, and that's it. Next game we have to talk about, guys, here. It was number 7 Maryland taking on Brown. Now, Brown, they gave Maryland all they could handle on Saturday, forcing Maryland to come back from behind and eventually win this one in overtime. Maryland has proven to be a very good overtime team. Maryland was down 10-7 early in this game, early in the third, and they needed to battle back. They go on a 5-goal run that you can kind of see here. Right here, from 8:39 in the third, started out by Ryan Siracusa down to Braden Irksa, capping that here. That gave them a 2-goal advantage at this point, and that was really the first time Maryland looked like they had control of this game. So now it's Brown's turn to battle back. They'd score 2 unanswered goals. The second of that run, knotting things up at 12s with just 2:41 left in the game. It was Ben Locke from Jack Kelly. Maryland, of course, they're going to come and they're going to answer. Braden Irksa, he scores unassisted with 2:07 left to give the Terps the lead right back. An opportunistic goal. Irksa picked the ball up off the back of the crease on a shot. Theriault goes back there to pick it up. People's goalie cannot pick it up before Irksa does. Irksa just runs up the left, scores, and now we're back to a 1-goal Maryland lead. But Brown was not done. With their backs up against the wall, they're able to get a possession late, thanks to McNaney taking a full field shot that ends up getting saved at the last minute. That gives Brown the possession that they needed to tie things back up. It was Jack Kelly that scored on a dodge on the left alley, just put it out of reach of McNaney, stick side low, excellent shot, and now things are tied up again, and we end up going into overtime. And the sudden death goal was scored by none other than Daniel Maltz. Irksa dodged his man kind of up off the left wing, didn't even really beat him, but sees Maltz with a bit of separation on the high crease, hits him, and crushes Brown's hopes of a top 10 upset. Now, for the Terps, and this was huge in this game, they were without Luke Wehrman. He got banged up against Notre Dame. He's week to week, I believe, now. They're going to review him on Monday to see if he'll be good for their upcoming game. So Brown was able to win 17 of 30 draws on the day without Wehrman being at the dot for Maryland. That third quarter, Brown won all 6 draws. That was a huge haul, because had Brown not won all 6 of those faceoffs, I think Maryland outscored them 3-2 over that third quarter right here. Brown wins all 6 of the draws there. That's able to kind of stifle Maryland's momentum. Now, granted, despite the fact that Brown did that, Maryland still goes on this huge run. So imagine what that run would have looked like over this third quarter stretch had Brown not been dominating the faceoff dot at that point here. So that was huge. And that just prevented Maryland from getting any real legit momentum overall. Now, from a team stats perspective, there's nothing in this game that you would have looked at and you would have been like, holy shit, this is how Brown hung. 2 things that I thought were key here. Shots, at surface level, 41-33, Maryland outshot Brown. You know, not a huge advantage, but an advantage. But that's just regular shots. Shots on goal, Brown actually had a 1-shot advantage, 23-22. So Maryland could not hit the cage in this one. Credit Brown's defense. Credit the people's goalie for being a big, you know, blocker in cage there. But look at saves. Maryland had the edge 10-8 between Theriault and McNaney with the 10 saves here. Turnovers, nothing crazy. Maryland had 2 more than Brown. We come in here into clears. Clears are important. Brown, 18 of 18. Maryland, not anything gross, 21 of 23. Ground balls, Maryland had the edge. Like I said, it's the faceoffs here. Brown wins the faceoff battle 17 to 13, and then extra man opportunities. Maryland had 4 extra man looks, and they were 0-for-4. Brown was able to stifle Maryland all day on extra man looks. But like I said, nothing that's just crazy that would have led you to believe that Brown, after kind of having some bad losses early, was going to come in here and take Maryland to overtime and scare the ever-living shit out of the Terrapins faithful. So good job by Brown. If we dig into here, into the stats, yet another team that doesn't let us sort the stats here. We've got Matt Corsi, 3 goals. Aiden McLean, 2 goals. Wells Bly, 2 points, 1-1. And Jack Kelly, who scored that game-tying goal late. He had a big game late for Brown, actually. He goes 2-1 on the day off just 3 shots. But if we come down here, we look at Maryland. Braden Erksa, that's what I wanted to see. 5 goals, 3 assists off 10 shots with just a turnover. 2 ground balls to boot here. One of them, the ground ball he picked up off the back of the crease. Great game out of him. Jack Corris, 2-1. Daniel Maltz, 4-0. Just overall, Terps, their big cats showed up, and it paid out in terms of a win here. Like I said, they're all not a great day. 7 saves, 14 goals against, so he did not look great in cage, but Brown hung despite that, thanks to Maryland shooting the ball terribly overall. McNaney won the goalie battle in terms of save percentage, but still not great for him either. 10 saves, 13 goals against, so big deal there. And Maryland is just hoping here that they're going to be able to get Weirman back. Who do they have up next? Maryland has...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Virginia next in College Park. So they're going to definitely want Luke Weirman against Virginia at home here coming up. And then they get into Big Ten play after that. The next game that we have to talk about here is another, one of the games that should have been a top game here. Number 8, Cornell against number 11, Penn State. This is the coaches' poll. I'm going by the media poll. Right off the bat here, the reason this score ended up being so gross in favor of Penn State is because Jack Ferrassian was a monster in this win. 15 saves on the day, 9 of which came over the course of the first half as Penn State buried Cornell early. And Ferrassian and his defense made life very difficult for Cornell all day long. So credit him for the spread in this game, because once he started looking good in cage, and he started right off with a beautiful save on a Matt Long shot. So I just can't say enough good things about Ferrassian. And he had an incredible game, started that way, finished that way, made Cornell just got in their heads from a shooting perspective. It wasn't all about defense, however. Matt Trainer, he had 7 goals and a dish. TJ Malone, 3 goals, 4 helpers. They dominated the Cornell defense. Trainer was good for 4 goals in addition in the first half, and Malone was 2-2 over that same span. Now, Malone, overall, he's been one of the best in the country, currently sitting at 3rd nationally in points per game. He's got 6.6 and a quarter points per game. He finishes the game with those 3 and 4, 3 goals, 4 helpers, just a smidge over that average. So Malone's been excellent for Penn State. Penn State, they scored the game's first 4 goals. They allowed the Big Red a little taste of what scoring a goal felt like when Hugh Kelleher and Michael Long got together. But then Penn State went on to score the game's next 6 goals en route to a 10-1 lead, late in that second quarter. Now, Cornell was able to finish the half off strong, and they score 3 unanswered to get back to within 10-4 by halftime. But Penn State came out in that second half. Malone scored, Trainer scored, and Jake Morin all scored unassisted. 3 in a row here to start that. Or actually, no. Malone got his right before the end of the half, and then Trainer and Morin came out and scored the first 2 of the third. And that gave Penn State a 13-4 lead, and it just never got better from there. And they rolled. Let's see here. And now, overall, we have an answer on what Cornell's defense is going to look like. They lost some talent to graduation. They lose Erland. They lose an All-American poll. That's not great. But their issue thus far now has been in cage. They lose Erland to the portal and to Hopkins, technically graduation. Neither Wyatt Nust or Matthew Tully have been the answer. Nust stopped just 1 shot, gave up 6 goals. Tully comes in, makes 10 stops, but still gives up 14 goals to finish that game out. It's not fully the goalie problem, I don't think. I think they've just been struggling defensively overall. They're giving teams, people a lot of good looks. And the Big Red defense just not great, and maybe not cut out to play top teams. We'll see, though, because their schedule is not going to get any easier as they now begin Ivy League play. They still have Syracuse and some other tests coming up here. for Penn State since losing their opener to Colgate, who's now proven to be a tough team. They've been playing like their lives depend on winning. They've won five straight with their last two wins coming against ranked teams in Yale and Cornell. Against Yale, they were down by, what, 7 goals? They were down by a lot in that Yale game. They come back and they win that game. In this game, it's the flip. They go up by a lot, and they just finish it out strong, and they smoke them. Now, if we go into our points here, Cornell, they held C.J. Kirst to freaking 2 goals and a helper off 9 shots. Not a bad day there for the Penn State defense. And like I said, Frassian was a big factor there. They hold Michael Long 1-3. Long had a very good look right at the beginning of the game that got stuffed immediately, and that's how it went for them the rest of the game. Long shoots 1-5. Kirst shoots 2-9. William First shoots 2-9. Spencer Wertheim shoots 0-3. So Penn State, credit their defense for making things very difficult for everyone on the Cornell side here. And then Matt Traynor, 7-1 off 15 shots. TJ Malone, 3-4 off 6 shots. They just played an incredible game here. They get, you know, a bunch of scoring down the roster. Matt Costin, 2 goals. Luke Mercer, 2 goals. Luke Wellstrom, 2 goals. So they get a bunch of scoring out of everybody. We come down and we look at the goalie stats. 14 saves, 8 goals against, not a bad day. That last goal was given up by Ben Johnson for Cornell. So dominance there. And then Penn State did this despite not playing great at the faceoff dot. They lose 14 of 33 at the dot, and they're still able to trounce Cornell like this. So excellent job by Penn State, and Cornell right now is pretty, pretty sad here heading home. This game surprised me early on here. I had actually picked Duke to cover in this one, so I was surprised to see Loyola come out. And at the half, it was, what, 7-7 up at the half. Duke comes out. They're up 6-4. Loyola at the end of the first. Loyola outscores them 3-1 over the course of the second quarter, and it was tied up at sevens going into halftime. But then Duke outscores them 9-3 over the course of the second half en route to that 16-10 win. Overall, it was what you would expect out of Duke in terms of offensive prowess. Josh Zuada goes for 6 assists on the day, misses on all six of his shots, but still 6 dimes. That's nice. Brennan O'Neill 4-1, Dyson Williams 4-0, and then just the usual suspects kind of fill it in here in terms of the box score. Jake Naso was huge, and I was actually surprised that the score was what it was, because Naso wins 17 of 25, Duke wins 20 of 30 at the faceoff dot. How that transpired early on, though, was Duke won 9 faceoffs early to Loyola's 7. So over the first half, it was 9-7 at the faceoff dot. Over the second half, it was 11-3 at the faceoff dot. So that explains why Duke was able to pull away and end up winning this game. Both teams terrible on the extra man. Both teams went 0 for 2. Duke went 0 for 2. Loyola went 0 for 4. Loyola would have liked to have buried a couple of those, but it did not happen. And Duke ends up winning this one. Let's see. Next game we have to talk about here is Virginia. And this one, once again, another close game at the half. Virginia was only up 10-9 at the half in this one. They used that third quarter to pull away 6-1. They outscored Towson over the course of the third quarter. They end up winning this one 19-5. Towson really never fully went away, and they were pesky and played pretty solid. Virginia, in terms of point putter uppers, Connor Schellenberger, monster day, 3 goals, 7 helpers, 10 points. Peyton Cormier goes 7-2 off 17 shots. Cormier put up 17 shots. McCabe Millen, 3-1. So Virginia, it just took them a while to get in the flow of it. The game was pretty ugly defensively, especially for Virginia. If we come down here and we look at the goalie battle, Noon struggled, 9 saves against, 12 goals against. He ends up getting spelled towards the end of the game. Kyle Morris plays a little bit better in terms of save percentage. Luke Downs was solid for Towson. I think he played better, obviously, over the course of the first half. Yeah, Towns was pretty solid through most of it here. So it really just came down to volume, possessions, and Virginia finally pulling their heads out of their asses, which allowed them to pull away and then win this game. Not a lot of great marquee matchups this weekend. Another important game that was played this weekend, Notre Dame and Ohio State. Ohio State impressed me. I thought Notre Dame was going to walk in this one. Notre Dame jumps out to a 3-0 lead. They were up at 1.6-2, and I had this game on the side as I was watching another game. And at this point, I'm like, all right, this is going to go about how I expected it to. But you end up seeing a lot less Notre Dame logos here in the box score. And then you start to see Ohio State, you know, goes on a they go on and they score 4 of 5, you know, after Notre Dame took that 6-2 lead. They what, get it back to within 6-3 by the half. By the end of the third quarter, it's 8-7 Notre Dame. And then Notre Dame in that fourth quarter to start out, they go on that big run. Eric Dobson starts it out. Chris Kavanaugh closes it out. Notre Dame has a 12-7 lead halfway through the fourth that they would not relinquish, and they end up winning this bad boy. Ends up being a Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh ends up having a monster day. Chris Kavanaugh goes for 5 goals, 3 assists off 7 shots. Huge day. Brother Pat, 1-3 on the day. Eric Dobson, big-time midfielder, he goes for 2 goals. So it ends up being the Kavanaugh show overall. Ohio State, though, where did Ohio State? Yeah, Ohio State did well at the box. Liam Entman, 10 saves, 10 goals against here. Caleb Fayok, not a bad day, 11 saves, 13 goals against. Overall, I was surprised. I thought Ohio State played well defensively. They did well at the faceoff dot to try to keep the possession battle pretty fair here. This is where you would hope that they were going to maybe have a bigger advantage, was with Tommy Burke at the faceoff dot. So I actually would say credit Will Lynch and who's the other, Hagstrom. Hagstrom only went 0-3, but you know, credit Will Lynch for going 14-24 against a very good Tommy Burke. Had he been able to maybe have a slightly better game, Burke, you could have seen a different outcome here, but that didn't happen. Another game here that we're going to talk about is Penn State, Villanova, Penn against Villanova. Penn kind of jumps out to it here early. I took Penn to cover, and I actually thought it looked like they were going to run away at some point here. Villanova kind of got it started out a little bit early, but Penn ends up taking, what was it here, a 6-3 lead, and then Villanova ends up scoring three of the next four to get things back to within a goal, and it was just a tit for tat. Villanova would answer, Penn would answer back. Villanova would chirp something else, and then Penn would chirp them back. So it went back and forth overall. Excellent game. I think I did win this one because I think the spread was 3. Although I got to just stop talking about betting. I got to stop betting because I'm the worst sports bettor. Who would have thought I'd be the worst lacrosse bettor that there is? Ben Smith, 2-2 for Penn. Griffin Skane, 2-1. Luke DiNola, 2-0. They fill things out in terms of goal scoring. As we said, Penn, I didn't say this yet, but yeah, Penn got roasted at the faceoff dot. 5 of 23, they lose, or they only win 5 of 23. So credit to Justin Coppola for Villanova for winning 17-22 on the day, but it didn't matter. Penn was just better overall, a little bit more efficient offensively. Defensively, they were good. And then Emmett Carroll has been a damn monster ball stopper here for Penn. 16 saves, 8 goals against for Emmett Carroll, who has been very good thus far this season. For the Quakers, he wins the goalie battle by a wide margin here. So he kind of erased that faceoff deficit for Penn in cage. Excellent job by him. Carolina, I just have to talk about another ACC team here. They play Hofstra. Nothing to see here, folks. They beat Hofstra 21-9. I just want to talk about it so that I can kind of make a mental note of who the hell did what here. Logan McGovern, veteran grad transfer, 3-3. Owen Duffy, the rookie. The young pimp goes for 4 goals and 5 assists on the day off 12 shots. A hell of a day out of him. Dewey Egan didn't do anything here overall. So, yeah, North Carolina absolutely waxed them. And if we come through here, Holy Cross, I felt like they did a pretty solid job early against Army. Army ends up slowly but surely pulling away over the second half. Reese Burke didn't put up any goals, but he goes 0 for in terms of goal scoring, but he puts up 5 assists. So that's pretty huge here. Goalie battle. Not a great day to be a goalie overall. And what'd Coletti do at the faceoff dot? 65%. So credit Holy Cross for kind of hanging, especially early in this game, but Army does eventually pull away and beat them. I saw Bellarmine beat Marquette. Kyle Playstead, 2-2. He actually put those points up early. I feel like he had 3 first half points, and then Marquette must have made him go quiet. I moved away from that game, started watching other games, but I saw a couple of Playstead's points. And then Benny O'Rourke, 1 or 2. He wears the 2-2. For Bellarmine. What else do we have here that I want to talk about? NJIT picks up yet another win, and they're now 7-0. They beat up on Lindawood here. I watched the very beginning of that just because it was one of the games that was on when other games weren't. Boston U ends up edging Bucknell UAlbany beats Hobart. And, oh, yeah, this was a surprise here, UMass. I thought UMass was going to beat Vermont. They were up early, and Vermont comes back and ends up winning this game. The Caleb Hammett, the Riz King here, was the Jizz King on this day. He goes 6 of 20 at the faceoff dot. That's huge when you're, you know, top-notch faceoff talent is losing 6 of 20 to a team who lost their top-notch faceoff talent a season before. Because Burke is now running around for Ohio State here. That's a big one here. And that, you know, Hammett's bad day loses the day overall for UMass. I know it's not that simple, and that's putting a lot on one kid, but, you know, Hammett is a very good faceoff man. He has a bad day, and his team loses a one-goal game to a team that I figured they'd beat by 3-5 legitimately. So that was surprising. I was surprised to see Jacksonville take out High Point. And it looks like that happened partly because, let's see, nothing gross. You know, even Colin Hoban played well in cage here for High Point even. So, yeah, they just got out a big win over High Point. So that, you know, those are always traditionally pretty good games. Lehigh beat Navy. I thought that might happen. I thought Navy would be a little bit better, and then, you know, but, yeah. I don't even know. I'm going to shut the hell up. Colgate beat Lafayette. So, hey, games that are going to be played today, though. We got a bunch of games that are going to be played today. Michigan against Harvard at Michigan. That's going to be a big one. We've also got Denver and Yale. Denver hosting Yale. And then Rutgers hosting Princeton. The Rutgers-Princeton game, they're going to hate each other. Both New Jersey teams, both gritty. So that should be a great battle. Denver right now sitting as number one, but I would call Denver, God forgive me, I would call Denver an illegitimate number one. I will admit I gave Denver my number one vote just by proxy of them beating Hopkins. The fact that they were undefeated and that they had beat Hopkins, who I thought was legitimately the number two team, I didn't feel like, even though I think Hopkins is better than Denver if they played them 10 times, I think Hopkins wins 6 or 7 of them. I put Denver at number one on account of them being undefeated, and they had the head-to-head over Hopkins. You know, that win against Cornell doesn't look as good now, so really Denver, but Denver still has two quality wins with win over number two, Johns Hopkins. Now, not number two anymore, but, you know, then number two. So, yeah, I call them an illegitimate number one, but that's going to be a huge game here, Denver-Yale. We're going to get to see, is Denver for real? If Denver wins this game, then I'm going to keep Denver at number one. And then I might start to say maybe they deserve to actually be there. But right now I feel like they got to earn that number one spot. And obviously they have to beat Yale here. And then I think St. Joseph's will probably beat Drexel today. So that's it, guys. I'm going to shut the heck up. I'm going to start cutting this bad boy up. I'm back. I'm just going to commit to doing the Sunday show. I have to do the Sunday show. I didn't do it last week. I did the film review. It bothered the shit out of me. So we're back. We're going to do at least the Sunday show. Work-wise, I've just been absolutely swamped, and it has been difficult to carve out time to put to this. So if you want me to put more time into the podcast, buy shit from the website, watch the videos, watch the ads, and share it with people, and that will happen. It will be done. So that's it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening, and Hoost is out.
The Lats Factor Podcast.